bedside. He called his lawyer, his doctor, and his pastor there, and he handed each one of them an envelope containing $25,000 in cash. And he made each one of them promise him that after his death, they would place these envelopes in his coffin. So soon after this, the old guy, he died. And at the funeral services, one by one, each one of them passed by and placed the envelope into the coffin as they were instructed. Well, a few months later, they all got together, and the pastor, feeling guilty, he got up and he confessed that his envelope only had $10,000 in it, that he decided rather than waste all this money that he would send some of it to a mission in South America. The doctor was real moved by, you know, well, and then the pastor, he wanted him to forgive him. Then the doctor, he was real moved by, you know, the pastor's confession and everything, and he spoke up and he said, well, he said, I only had $8,000 in my envelope. He said, I felt compelled to give some of it, he said, to a worthy medical charity. And man, the lawyer, in a self-righteous outrage, he voiced out to his friends. He just couldn't believe their behaviors, and he wanted them to know that he'd placed the full amount into the coffin. His envelope contained his personal check for the whole $25,000. Well, like I said, it wasn't no belly buster. But now, this is New Year. And, you know, New Year's all about starting fresh. We can't change what has already happened, but we can plan for things for our future. That's what the pastor is doing at this time. He's in a spatial union with God right now, seeking God's direction on where he wants to take our church in the year 2016. So we need to be in prayer for him and his family and all of our church families, asking for his guidance and protection in all things. As the deacons agreed along with the pastor to do the messages for the first month of the year, here it is, week three already, and it's my turn. And also, if you haven't realized yet, it's only 49 more weeks till Christmas. So, as I started to pray and ask God to lead me in something to have a message on, about the time I thought he'd give me an answer and was giving me materials, you know, to do a message on, and I'd start to put it together, and I'd come up at a dead end. And this happened several times, so he led me to put together my personal testimony. And this is something that we all need to have on hand and in our minds for the unexpected question, how did you come to know the Lord? But before we get started, let's look at a few scriptures about ourselves. Isaiah 44:2, the first part of this verse reads, "Thus says the Lord, who made you and formed you from the womb, who will help you." Here we're being told that our existence was not a mistake, but it was planned by God, and that he'll always be there to help. Then in Philippians 1:6, from the Living Bible translation, it says, "I am sure that God, who began the good work within you, will keep right on helping you grow in His grace until His task within you is finally finished on that day when Jesus Christ returns. God's telling us in this verse that it takes time. Our growth is time-consuming, and He takes no shortcuts. Then in Mark 16:15, we are told by Jesus to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. As we grow and study His word, we are set aside from others. He will develop us into world-class Christians because we know we are saved to serve and made for a mission. This separates us from worldly Christians because they're just looking at God for personal fulfillment. So as we grow and strive to become Christ-like, we must remember that this is a lifetime commitment. And God's not done with us until He calls us home. Getting involved in church started at a very early time in my life. I was 5 years old. It was in the pretty early part of 1953 in a place called the Pleasant Valley Mennonite Chapel. This was a small mission church sponsored by the Berlin Mennonite Church. The services were first held in the old Pleasant Valley School building, which was the old Head Start building on Otsego Avenue. Later, they built a church that is still being used today. I know the dates are pretty close because I still have my first Bible. It was given to me on March 15th, 1953, for attending 7 Sundays in a row. I attended there pretty regularly, and while in my teen years, I became close to a couple of men in the church. One of them was a pastor, the late Monroe Slaybaugh, and my Sunday school teacher, William Baer. Bill and I, in the summer of my 14th birthday, went home to his family's farm in Elida, Ohio. This is up by Lima, to overhaul their family's car. A couple of years prior to this, I, like a lot of the youth, I got to go to summer church camp. And the church camp that I attended was Camp Luz in Orville, Ohio. These were the only times in my life that I had been exposed to a day-to-day Christian walk and being totally surrounded by people serving God continuously. I felt the urge to taste this kind of living, not knowing what it was going to bring. So on a Wednesday night, following their midweek prayer services, Bill's wife, her family was busy making several batches of homemade ice cream. And at this time, I got into a conversation with Bill and explained to him that I wanted to get closer to God and ask Him how I could do this. And as I look back at that moment when Bill explained the plan of salvation to me and led me in a sinner's prayer, it takes on a brighter and more complete feeling. It didn't happen in a church or group setting. It took place on a warm night under the very stars that God had created. And it just gives you an awesome feeling. Well, as time went on, I entered high school, and I started to grow away from God's ways and became worldly. It was like I was a tough guy, and I didn't have the time to be churched. As time went on, I grew farther and farther away. This time in my life was a hard time, as it is for most teens. But as I look back, I know that these young people today have a lot tougher time than what I did in school. In high school, I played some football, but really never made it anywhere with that. And during this time in my life, I'd done a lot of things that teenagers do. I started to experiment in areas that I didn't need to. The worst social habit that I took on was smoking. The drinking didn't come until I was out of school. The next area I got involved in was girls. And it took me places that I shouldn't have went. I went with a girl a couple of years, and she became pregnant. And at that time, the sociable thing to do was get married. Well, we were married for about 17 years. And during that period, we had three wonderful children. But we had no other bond together. And it was during this time that I became a heavy drinker. After work, I'd stop at the neighborhood carryout, and I'd get me a 12-pack. And I'd go home, and whatever chores or things I was getting into at home at that time, repair work or something, I'd start in drinking, and about usually around 7 o'clock or so in the evening, I'd make another trip back over to the carryout to get another 12-pack. And usually I'd save a couple of those before I went to bed. And the next morning, I'd drink those on the way to work. You see, I wasn't like Brother Ron. I acquired a taste for it, and I liked it. And during the late 60s and 70s, the drug scene wasn't in full swing yet, so really the only thing that I got to experiment with or felt like experimenting with, I took some speed. By taking this, I was allowed to drink for a day or two and still be able to go to work. And as I went through this period of my life, I was led down many different roads, but probably the most interesting one that I went down, and it was probably God's leading me, I became a volunteer fireman. I was still with a rowdy bunch of guys. We drank, we cussed, we stayed out late at night. But in doing so, God was teaching me a service. He was teaching me how to help others in times of need. I'd like to share a couple stories about emergency runs that I feel started to change me. But during this time, in the late 70s, my family and I started attending a small church. It was in this church. God was putting me under conviction and changing me, and I didn't realize it. The first run that I'd like to share with you was took place on a summer evening when a drunk went speeding down a roadway and with his family and tried to beat an oncoming train and wound up killing the whole family. When we got on scene, the car was on along the side of the tracks. the first fireman to the car. He crawled inside, and he was checking the victims, and he said that they were all gone. The second fireman to the car, it was me. And my buddy, he asked me to kneel down and give him a hand, and he handed me a little 3-year-old girl. And I turned and I laid her limp body on the gurney. The next victim that we took out of the car was a mother. And she was expecting another child. And then we took the father out. This whole entire family was taken for an uncalled mistake. This next run, it took place 32 years ago this coming Tuesday. It started out to just to be an ordinary worship after a truck had jackknifed and crashed on into a guardrail just below County Road 6 on State Route 16. And when he hit the guardrail, it ruptured the fuel tank and diesel fuel went all over the road. Our station was dispatched to wash it up. The two fellows that answered the call was the assistant chief and myself. We were on scene for probably a half hour or so. And as we were driving back to the station, we'd been talking, and I heard a gurgling sound, and I looked over, and I seen that he was gasping for breath. Immediately, I radioed the sheriff's department to dispatch a squad to our station, that I had a fireman down, and I was on my way back to the station. When I got to the station, one of the firemen's wives, who lived next door to the station, met me on scene, and we started doing CPR until the squad arrived to transport him. Well, Jake, our assistant chief, he didn't make it. And as fire chief, I had the duty to assist the family in with all funeral arrangements and wherever the department could help. With the good help of a friend, the city fire chief at that time, we got all the proceedings taken care of. And as I look back, it's just amazing how God was always there in control. And I just didn't realize it. At this time in my life, I was unemployed from the lower paper mill where I'd worked for several years and was in the process of getting a divorce. In May of 1984, I got on at Clow's and I started to work there in the pipe shop. And a short time later, my divorce was over. I had an old blazer, a boat, a few clothes, my tools, and a bunch of bills. But I was happy. Things went well at Clow's for about 2 years until McQueen bought them out. In September of that year, I got laid off. And I was unemployed for about 2 years. During this time, I was reacquainted with a friend from church that was going through the same situation as I had. We started seeing each other, and soon we both, because of our financing, decided that we should move in and live with each other. So I moved in with her and her two girls. We both, professing to be Christians, knew this wasn't what God had intended, but it was a worldly decision on both our parts. Audrey and I lived this way for some time, occasionally attending different churches. One summer evening, as we sat outside our mobile home in Warsaw, two of our friends came down the street. Pastor Ron Davis and his wife. They came into the yard and started talking to us. And while in his conversation, Pastor Ron extended an invitation for us to come to church on Sunday morning. I explained to Ron that, you know, that Audrey and I wasn't living the way God wanted us to. And, you know, we just didn't feel like we should be going to church. But all Ron would say was, you come to church, he said, God will take care of the rest. Well, you know, that we started going up to Gospel Hill on and off for a while, but things still didn't seem right. Finally, in the spring of 1988, I called Audrey one night from work and told her that I knew what our problem was. And right away, she just, you know, she thought I'd lost my mind. But she wanted to know what I'd come up with. And I said, we need to get married, and things will change. Well, it didn't take much convincing, because God was working on both of us. On June 25th, 1988, at Warsaw Park, we became husband and wife. In God's eyes, along with family and friends, and Pastor Davis doing the honors. As our lives took on a new direction, we were now the parents of six children, ages 12 to young adults. And we continued to move forward. We had our trials, but we were happy. In 1994, Audrey and I started to look for some different housing arrangements. We purchased a property where we currently live and decided to buy a new mobile home. Things were going good. We were attending church at Pleasant Valley Baptist Church, pastored at that time by Denville McVeigh, when in August of 96, I was involved in an accident at Clowes. I fell through a catwalk about 20 feet. And when I hit the ground, I was in a bed of hot iron slag. And as I hit the ground, I was beside a big old steel beam. I cried out for God, the same as we all do in our time of need. And as I cried out at that moment, everything around me just got bright, and the pain went away. When the emergency squad arrived, they started to evaluate how to get me out of where I was so I could be transported. I was sitting upright on the ground. My right elbow was shattered, with both bones in my forearm sticking out and up toward my bicep. I had to help them get me on a backboard by shifting back and forth so they could slide it under me. In the meantime, a deputy had went over to the church in the valley where Audrey and our daughter Kelly were teaching Bible school in the evenings. The deputy told her that it hurt my arm and that they were transporting me to the emergency room. The ER contacted MedFlight to fly me to Columbus, but they weren't flying that night because of fog. So a helicopter from Cleveland Metro was dispatched, and I had a crew from there looking me over and preparing to transport me. As they evaluated me, the doctor that was with the crew told me that the bones that were sticking out of my arm had to be put back in. And it was going to be painful. Well, they give me a large injection of Demerol, along with all the other pain meds that they'd already given me. The doctor, before he started putting my arm back in place, he told my son Bubba to lay across my chest to hold me down because he knew what was going to take place. After this, we got ready to take off. And while they were talking with Audrey for a short time, she persuaded them to let her go along in the helicopter. And soon we were in the air and headed for Cleveland. The trip from Coshocton to Cleveland took about 40 minutes. I was still totally awake and answering all their questions. Probably at least 12 or more doctors in attendance checked me from head to toe. After this, I was rushed into surgery where they put my arm back together with plates, pins, screws, and on x-rays it looks like they took little hog rings and put around pieces of bone that was shattered off. And when I came out of recovery, the doctor, he told Audrey and I that he had fixed my arm where it was in a comfortable position. And then he went on, he proceeded to tell Audrey that I didn't understand, what he was talking about, that the only range of motion that I'd have with my arm, I'd be able to move it in and out. Well, short time after this, Audrey and the kids, they took off and went back home. But about 2 o'clock the next afternoon, I called Audrey, and I told her that I'd talked to the doctor, and I'd convinced him to let me go home, that, you know, what they were doing there, I could do at home, and that was nothing. So she and my daughter rested for a while, and then they came back up to get me. But before the doctor would let me go, he told me I had to see him in a week, that he had to check it out and see how things were progressing. At the end of the week, we returned to his office there at Metro. They cut the cast off, and the doctor, he came in, and he looked at it, said it was doing good, and he turned around, he looked at Audrey, and he winked at her, and he said, asked me, he said, can you move your arm up and down? I said, yeah. So I moved it, about an inch or so. He picked his papers up, and he just left the room. It seemed like he'd been gone for several minutes, but when he returned, he looked at us, and he said, I had just to go out and thank the man upstairs, because he said, I didn't put that arm together that way. He said it wasn't supposed to move. But then with a lot more prayer and God giving me a determined attitude and a lot of physical therapy, I continued to work until I retired a little over a year ago. You see, it took me 30-some years to roam around in the wilderness like the Israelites. And all the time, God had his hand on me, trying to get me turned around, trimming and cutting off rough edges. But it took this accident to get me flat on my back for me to get closer to him. He used this time to show me that he had always been there for me, and he had other plans now. This wasn't the end of our trials and our tribulations. You might say it was just a beginning. The next month, in September of 96, I lost my dad after a surgery. Over the next few years, we lost a daughter, had two granddaughters seriously injured in a car accident. My wife was diagnosed with cancer, and her daughter just is still recovering from major ankle surgery. Life hasn't been easy for us, the same as it is for many of you. But through each of these painful experiences, our faith and our family's faith has grown stronger. Audrey and I grew closer to God. Every pain and every problem that we go through, God has a reason. We may take a long time to learn what He is trying to show us. Life is not trouble-free. With every pain and every bad experience, we are drawn closer to God. God is in total control of our lives because He knew all things that would happen to us before we were born. Psalms 39:16 says, "Your eyes saw my substance being yet unformed, and in the book they were all written, the days fashioned me when as yet there was none of them." When you look at this verse, we see God as a great architect, drawing and designing each of us in a special way for His purpose here on this earth and in eternity. Through all our trials, we found a peace that only comes from our Almighty God, who offers us His never-ending love. Tanner or Mike, would you please put the scriptures up on the screen here? I'd like to read Ecclesiastes 3:1-8. And while I'm reading this, I'd like for you to read along too, what they're putting up here on the screen. If I can read this fine print. "To everything there is a season and a time, to every purpose under this heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted, a time to kill, and a time to heal, a time to break down, and a time to build up, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones together, a time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to get, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to cast away, a time to rend, and a time to sow, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time of war, and a time of peace. Remember, our growth takes time, and God don't take no shortcuts. Our lives have to follow a plan that God has already made for us. We're all different. I'd like to thank God for giving me this message. And I'd also, I'll use Rick's version of it. I'd like to thank you all for listening to me. So I'll close here in prayer, and then this altar, it'll be open for anybody that wants to come. Maybe God has touched your heart this morning. Maybe he wants you to turn your life over to him or rededicate it. But please come. The pastor or any of the deacons will assist if needed. Bow your heads, please. Most gracious Heavenly Father, we again praise you and thank you.